Hey everybody, welcome back to the Perpetual Podcast. My name is Owen McGregor and today I am delighted to be joined by Brendan O'Connell, who is a new physio on board here at Perpetual Fitness in Windmill Lane. Brendan, how are you?
Very good, thanks for having me on, Owen.
No problem.
Great to be here.
First time making his debut on a podcast, so we're hoping to get all the golden nuggets today. So Brendan, very briefly, just to give obviously everyone a little bit of background, tell me, I suppose, who's Brendan O'Connell and how did you get into, I suppose, helping people?
I'll try not to be too long with this, but I suppose when I was young, played an awful lot of sports. So rugby predominantly my main sport, played schoolboy rugby and then played a lot of club rugby as well. And like anyone getting into physio who's into sports, plenty of injuries along the way. And I always kind of searched around as to what I wanted to do, knew I wanted to be in the kind of the healthcare kind of realm. Just thought like I enjoyed working with physios when I was younger, why not become one? So was lucky enough to get the points, went into Trinity, did a four-year degree there. Was a bit unsure about the next step then, and then on my final year was very lucky to get granted an internship in Leinster Rugby. And the plan was to go for a year, see how I get on. I went for a year, I stayed for 4 years. I then left and did a master's over in Loughborough in the UK. And I went back to Leinster for another 3 years. I couldn't get enough of it. Absolutely loved it there. And so I did 7 seasons there, unbelievable experience, like in terms of environment, in terms of learning, just in terms of the lads and the people in the building as well. It was incredible for my own development. And just, I think really like it started as an internship, was lucky enough to get kept on, but just kicked me on in terms of personal development, in terms of professional development as well. An amazing experience. Left Leinster then and was lucky enough to move to the IRFU, where I worked with the Irish Sevens teams, the men's and women's teams, for right up to the Olympic cycle there, which was a bit of a pivot, but like again, an amazing experience, and just dealing with different athletes as well. And been fortunate enough to also have worked with the Dublin Senior Hurling team for the last four seasons, which has been incredible as well. So went from professional rugby in Leinster to a bit of a pivot to the Sevens and the Hurlers. So been blessed to have so many opportunities to work in professional sport. And then I decided it's probably time to get out of professional sport and go the private practice route.
Okay,
been in private practice for about a year and I've just opened up here now. So it's been great so far.
Exciting times, exactly.
Absolutely.
So that's a lot of experience, obviously, working with high performance teams. So it's probably a good point to start. What was it like kind of coming out of college, let's say the internship, straight into essentially one of the best rugby teams, let's say worldwide, that would be known, and working with, I suppose, top end athletes?
Oh, well, like my first week or two, I was so nervous, I could barely get a word out. And for anyone who knows me, that's a rarity. I couldn't believe it coming out. And I was so fresh and naive to things as well, in terms of, obviously I had my college degree, so I had a bit of knowledge, but just seeing the level that the lads operate in there, the professionalism, also just the culture, culture's bandied around a bit as a term, but
definitely
I can say without doubt the culture in Leinster when I started and to the day I left, it was phenomenal. Like even from everyone in the building greeting everyone every morning, everyone had a handshake and said hello, regardless if you were bottom of the ladder or you were you were head coach. Leo is a big man for driving that, and I think to be fair that the driving those consistent standards from medical team into the playing group into the S&C team and into the video analysis just ran through the whole entry of the club, and it was made it a very enjoyable place to work and also to grow. Growth was a huge thing in terms of professional growth but also personal growth.
Yeah, of course.
And it was just to be involved for me, I'm not getting too sentimental here, but as a young lad I remember going to Donnybrook Stadium and seeing all the old lads like Dennis Hickey, who would have been, I'm a Mary's man, so I have to give him a shout out. But watching all these lads and then having the privilege to work for the club that I supported and was so into was like, it was phenomenal. I was pinching myself for the first couple of weeks. And then you grow into it and then realize, okay, hang on, like I'm going to make a career of this, and I have to, if I'm working here, I'm part of the furniture here, I need to get on board here and really kind of challenge myself and grow. And to be fair, the lads, with a great medical team there and great backroom staff there, gave me plenty of space and opportunity to grow as well. They knew what level I was at and where I could get to. So, they gave me plenty of opportunities to grow and experience. And, you know, like, we had some great days, some bad days, but thankfully for Leinster, the majority were really, really good days as well.
Definitely in the last few years, anyway.
Days I'll never forget, like, you know, so from winning Pro 14 titles, I'm kind of giving away my age there when that was, but, you know, I loved every minute of it.
And, like, because, like, I suppose people would probably think and probably expect professional rugby players to be very diligent with stuff like rehab, and what was the kind of main things they would have came to you about to kind of, I suppose, learn from you at the start regarding, let's say, I suppose, rehab or, I suppose, avoiding injuries?
Oh, massive. Like, the big thing as well, and there was a bit of a shift in my time in Leinster. So when I started, you know, the traditional notion that the physio is you go in and you get beaten up by the physio and you feel amazing. There's definitely a place for the manual therapy, but I think it kind of moved towards a model of autonomy and like, right, I'm more of a facilitator as opposed to you coming in and getting passive treatment off me. And I think that's the big thing. And I think if you can, like, the players start to look for deficits and then you facilitate them to change their deficits, and it gives them the power then, and the onus is on them that, you know, they have their bits and pieces, and, you know, you're not, it's more of a collaborative effort as opposed to you coming in and just getting treated, and there's definitely a place for that, but it just became more of a collaborative kind of, right, how are we going to get to where we need to be, and can you take ownership of it in combination with me taking ownership of it? I think that was the big shift. In terms as well as, like, it's like physio in terms of rehab and stuff like that, you it's reactive in terms of you get injured on Saturday, you know, let's get you right for the following week. But it's also performance enhancing as well, as, okay, right, how do I get my marginal gains, how do I stay ahead of the curve in terms of performance, but also how do I prevent the next injury coming? And I think that's a huge piece in terms of the prehab piece as well, that, you know, I'm not technically injured, but, like, what can I be doing to stop the next injury coming? And I think buying into that, and we got huge buy-in from a player side and also from a coach thing, from a coach perspective as well, in terms of how to prevent the injury that's coming. Or, like, you know, ideally, you look at the best players are the ones who are always fit, you know, and they're always training as well. So it's how do we keep that going and get ahead of anything coming down the track?
Yeah, so it's like, I suppose that's the proactive attitude, isn't it? Like you said, not be reactive, like not wait for the injury to come. Well, it's obviously going to happen, but proactive in terms of planning for that. How would you even, let's say proactively with a rugby player, how would you even design what they need to prehab before a match or before, like, a session or...
See, we had a very good system where we'd screen about all of our players regularly. So you might screen them maybe once every couple of weeks or once a month, go down through their body, identify deficits, you set standards for what you expect. So from a shoulder perspective, say, for example, you want to be bulletproof through your rotator cuff, right? How are we testing that? Is there deficits? Okay, that's your prehab then. That's the area of focus. Retest that in a month. All right, if it's changed, brilliant, and you box that off. If it hasn't, either they're not doing it, or secondly, I picked the wrong exercise. So that's the collaboration piece around that as well. We developed a general robustness strategy where, you know, you do an exercise. It's incorporated in liaison with the SSE coach as well, where your robustness program is built into your every weekly gym program, if that makes sense. So you're ticking a box in terms of loading your hamstrings, loading your calves. And again, you mightn't have a hamstring injury or you mightn't have a calf injury, but it's just more preventative. Right. And that idea of just getting ahead of the curve in terms of, right, we've got a good bit of loading here in combination with your normal power and your SSE program. And just, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you can have the greatest players in the world, but if they're not fit and they're not on the pitch, they're not much use.
Yeah, they're not going to go to you. I actually remember when I was starting off doing my CrossFit, I suppose, let's say, competitive career, I always felt, even when I was growing up in football or anything like that, we discussed this kind of off air that we wouldn't have followed any S&C program or anything like that. And as I kind of progressed and got a little bit older and understood about training, like, I followed a particular protocol that took about 35 to 40 minutes before I even started my sessions. Now, obviously, a regular person who's coming into the gym or anything like that or training with us here won't be able to follow it. But I think it is important that you would have some proactive, let's say, thing to follow that you should try to do to, I suppose, look after yourself, which is important, isn't it?
Oh, massively so. And like, it goes to that point. You're switching from the injury mindset to a performance mindset in terms of, right, how am I going to prepare for my CrossFit session where I'm getting the most out of my session?
Yeah.
And it's about, it's working with people in terms of like, yeah, I can only get there maybe 10 minutes before the start of a session, right? What can we get the biggest bang for a buck from in terms of give me two exercises, yeah, two things that I can just hit the spot, all right, I'm good to go, and then they can get the most out of their CrossFit session, they can get the most out of their training as well afterwards.
Yeah, I think
that's key for people outside of the professional realm. Like, it's easy in the professional realm.
Yeah, they'd be like, it's their job, isn't it?
It's their job, and you know, you can take as long as you want, and you've the whole day, well, you don't have the whole day, but you know, you have a lot of time and stuff, whereas for gym goers and normal people, like, you know, it's about being efficient and like, how can you marry this kind of stuff into their actual training and not like make it more condensed for them?
I suppose that probably brings us on to, I suppose, the regular person. Let's say, not even the regular person, but someone that would come into Perpetual, let's say, for the first time, or they're going to the gym for the first time. What's the common things you might see of someone that might, let's say, go to your practice and get some advice or prehab or rehab? What's the kind of things that come up most often?
I'd say at the moment, there's probably three main areas. There's probably shoulder niggles, like in terms of the rotator cuff impingement is probably the biggest thing I see. And that's probably just... that's pressing and overhead movements as well. That's probably the big one. Then it's in around the hips. So tight hip, like the common tight hip syndrome, you know, a hip impingement and kind of weaknesses in around their hips and just constantly feeling like they need to kind of stretch. And then you have a lot of calf issues and shin splints as well, because, you know, the way runners, it's an occupational hazard for a lot of runners as well. So they'd kind of be the three main ones. Obviously, you'd have a lot of amateur athletes who come in and you get your soft tissue injuries, like your hamstring strains and your quads. But for non-athletes and just kind of gym goers, I would say shoulders, hips, and shin splints.
The whole body, essentially.
Exactly.
There's always one point.
Yeah.
The classic thing that you would see normally, well, let's say when people go to a physio, right, is they will go, and I know I've done it myself loads of times, you go for your injury, okay? You do your session, you do your, let's say, 60 or 45 minutes with yourself.
Yeah.
They get the rehab and then they don't do it.
it's you know, it's funny you say that. Like, the biggest shift for me coming from a professional background from professional sport into the private practice is that kind of idea that people mightn't necessarily do what you tell them to do. But I think for me, and the biggest thing on that is it's trying to get buy-in. It's trying to, like, right, firstly, you're not coming to physio and then you're leaving with 20 exercises.
Yeah.
You're coming, I'm asking you to do two or three things. The huge thing around is the understanding, and for me it's test, retest, and make it as objective as possible, right? What's weak? All right, we've tested that. That's your work on. You have 2 weeks, come back and we'll retest it. So then you can kind of get buy-in, and then when people see that, like, okay, that's actually worked and I'm stronger there, then it translates into, okay, I'm able to perform better, I'm able to lift better, I'm able to train better. And then you start to get buy-in, and then it's a snowball effect where, you know, you're not having to, like, you know that you've got the buy-in there, and it just becomes automatic then as well. And that's huge.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. I know for a fact, like, many times I wouldn't have done anything, but then I suppose if the niggle persists or the injury persists, then you know you need to do it.
People sometimes
can get away with it the first time. They might come there and they expect for the magic fix for the first session.
Yeah.
And obviously everyone's very impatient. So then let's say a client that would come into yourselves, then what is that best way in terms of are you giving them an exercises like that you'd obviously show them, but are they developing it? Do you show them on an app or do you send them the videos, or what's the best way you?
So the first thing when I see someone is, firstly, it's a clear diagnosis, right? When you come in and you leave, you know what the diagnosis is. So again, it kind of goes back to my big thing when I was first starting, you're going to a physio and you don't know what's wrong with you. So clear diagnosis, okay. Then you go through a detailed assessment of what deficits are there. And generally, I tend to match an exercise to a deficit. So say, for example, in around hips, common area you see is a weak in around hip flexor. All right, we can test that, give you an exercise for that. We go out to the gym, we demo a set or two. Then I will set you up on my system in terms of an app where you have the exercise on your phone. You get a plan, 2 week block. Okay, we'll retest that in 2 weeks. Has it changed? Has it not changed? If it hasn't changed, it's either it's on me that it's not the exercise, that's not an issue, or I've got the exercise selection wrong. If it hasn't, or it can also, that's the collaboration piece as well. if you haven't done it, it becomes very evident that you haven't done it as well. And that's kind of the model I kind of like to work with, in terms of it's a collaborative approach and it's objective. And that's the thing. So, you know, again, you're not coming out with 20 different exercises. You're coming out with a clear understanding of what's wrong, how do we test it, and then what the fix is, and how do we retest it. And that's huge.
Yeah. Someone with a busy life, right? You know, let's say the 9 to 5, the classic lines that you would hear, I'm sure, a lot in the physio, family, work, stress, and everything like that.
100%.
What's the advice you give to someone like that that needs to follow their rehab?
The thing is, and I always say it to people, you need, like, getting the time as a father of two and like a busy enough life as well, it's firstly trying to find the time to train is huge. And my big push on it is I'm really, really keen to keep people training. It's like this idea of taking you out of normal classes or not training at all is just a non-negotiable. Like, people who are in the habit of training need to continue to train. And where you can, if I can marry potentially some of the exercises and incorporate them as part of their training, is huge. So again, like I said to you, it's that piece of collaboration with the coaches and the SSE in terms of, okay, right, you can't do this is hurting. Okay, let's just not scrap that, or can we modify it, or can we modify it to and kind of kill two birds with one stone, where you're doing your rehab and you're hitting the area you need to rehab, but you're doing it in a modified way and it's incorporated as part of your class.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of model. And then you have your two little bits of work on that you can do where you don't necessarily have to go to the gym, or you can do it at home, or you incorporate it as part of your warm-up. And that's the key. And it's, you know, life's busy enough and it's hard enough to get time to train as is. You don't need a physio adding another hour or two every day to that as well. So, you know, it's a big believer in trying to make it fit into people's lives and make it practical and make it, and like, be realistic about it as well in terms of what you can expect people to do or what they can't do.
Yeah, it's something we love to hear. Keep them training, because it is important as well, because I've even seen people with injuries before, and let's say they are pulled back a little bit too much, and then you can see, like, let's say mentally and physically, then they're just like, they're not in the same place, and it affects them a lot much. So I think it is important, if you are looking for someone to work with as a physio, wherever you are in the world, that you find someone that does want to maintain your training, because it's going to make such a good difference, such a big difference, obviously, in your recovery, your length of time of recovery, but also just keeping you in the same state, as you said, of training, because it helps with people so much.
And the thing with it is, if you built a good habit of training regularly, like dropping out of that habit, it's really hard to get back into it. It's really, you want to maintain your load, and, like, you know, you already have a good training load training, right? You need to stay in that. You need to stay in that as much as you can. And also as well, for me as a physio, my bias is in strength. Like, the fundamentals of physio for me is, if you just generally get strong and in a targeted way, you'll get better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, who am I? Like, I just think if you can just slight tweaks here or there where needed, but again, keeping people training is huge.
Okay. Good to hear. Right. So let's say, give me one common mistake that people make in terms of their rehab.
There's probably one, probably overzealousness as well, you know, and it's a really, really good complaint, where you give someone a work on to do and they go hell for leather for 2 or 3 weeks. But again, we go back to the sustainability piece, like, they're doing it every day. Just that notion of, like, you know, same way you wouldn't squat 7 days a week, you know, I wouldn't get you to do a strength exercise that of a deficit I've identified 7 times a week, you know. So it's a really good complaint. And look, you'd always rather have the complaint of trying to pull someone back as opposed to get someone going. But, you know, like, rest and recovery is huge. And you see it the whole time where, you know, if you're not getting the recovery in to allow the adaptation of the rehab you've given, you know, you're kind of taking one step forward and two steps back a little bit as well. So it's being diligent and getting after the rehab, and you love the intent of it, but actually it's the respect of, you know, recovery and rest days and getting all the other stuff outside of that, your nutrition, your sleep, all that kind of bits and pieces right as well, that it's complementary to the rehab you're given as well. Because you, like, the last thing I want to do is overload someone when they're already struggling, do you know, that kind of way. So it's kind of marrying the two together.
I think it's good. It's a very good comparison you've done there, in terms of, like, you wouldn't squat 7 days a week. You're not going to do, like, obviously your rehab every day of the week if you're going to be working on the same area, because you're obviously not going to give it that time to, I suppose, build or recover. We were speaking the last day again off air, and it was actually an interesting conversation. We talk about stretching, right? Okay. And it's like, you know, things a lot of people do. And the line we came out with, someone that stretches for like an hour before they go to sleep and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, how beneficial is stretching to people, like, let's say, before they go to bed or when they're watching TV? And
like the thing is, and I want to be really, really clear, like I'm not against stretching in any shape or form. It's what you're trying to get out of it. So for me, stretching, the prime time to stretch is in your pre-session. So, you know, there's been a lot of studies come out where the effects of stretching last for, you know, 90 minutes to 3 hours after you do it. So the idea that, you know, and you see it all the time in clinic, that I stretch for an hour every night before I go to bed, but my back pain isn't going. Well, you know, you probably feel great at 12 o'clock at night or 1 a.m. in the morning because you've got the benefit of it. And unless you want to set an alarm clock to wake up every 4 hours and keep doing it, it's not the most efficient way. So for me, like if I'm training at 7 p.m. at night, 6:30 to 7, if I have the time, that is the window where you get the maximum benefit. You'll get the adaptations. And then it means then when you're going into your sessions, you're getting the full beneficial, like the full max effect of it as well. So for me, not against stretching in any way, shape or form, and definitely huge value in it, but it's just what you want to get out of it. You need to know the reason you're doing it and what you're expecting to get out of it. So from my end, from a performance point of view, as part of a warm-up routine or pre-session, 100% unbelievably beneficial. In terms of if you're doing it at night before you go to bed, you know, some people will do that from a mindfulness point of view, 100%, that is spot on, but you need to know why you're doing it. If you think you're that's going to fix your back pain, you know, I've seen it so much in clinic where, you know, I stretch every night and I come back in and my back's as stiff as it was the day before. You know, there's not a huge pile of benefit there.
Yeah. Right, guys, get stretching before your session. So I think it's like a very interesting like point we can take from this all. Like even though you have worked with performance like athletes along, you've taken from those learnings, bringing that back into, I suppose, even high performing individuals in the workplace at the moment who are seeing common things like hips and shoulders and calves. We're all experiencing the same thing. But it being like proactive in terms of like seeking assessments from yourself that can help you, I suppose, perform better or I suppose just feel better and stuff like that. And obviously then obviously not having to go down the rehab route. But if it does happen, you're the man to call. So let's say if someone is listening to this, where do we find all your details?
So I'm based in Windmill Lane in Perpetua there. My website is www.boxsportsphysio.com. And you can get me on my email as well. It's boxsportsphysio@gmail.com. Welcome. All shapes and sizes are welcome.
Right, guys. Brendan, thank you so much for joining us on the Perpetua Podcast. Thanks, guys. See you soon.
Thanks very much, Owen.